So we have to plunge in right away into the investigation of what Lynn called in classical composition, the entire composition is both generated by a single act of insight and never departs from being an expression of that single insight. Now we have learned in the opening remarks by Michael Fitt, you know, the Bach example, the fugal conception, that means an ordered, very well perfected presentation of thought objects. Now Mozart made in his final year of life, he was 35 years old, an enormous step forward. And if people afterwards, you know, all people who are steeped in classical music, not at least like for instance Johannes Brahms, were in awe to when they were talking about this work Requiem, unfinished, fragment, but in a way, as some people reported, you know, expressing something never heard in all life, in all history, about something what is happening in mankind. And this done in a funeral mass, but it should be not reduced to the question of church music. It is not just church music, even if Requiem is in the tradition of 500 years of a funeral mass, and definitely Mozart studied very detailed Bach's music, Michael Haydn's music, and others of the earlier time. But he did something completely extraordinary, and it is a genial stroke which we are dealing with and trying by plunging into it to absorb and to understand in what way actually Mozart made it possible to have such a configuration of music and text. And I think the beauty is also with this Requiem that because Mozart didn't finish it, and we have an autograph which only shows the key essential points where Lynn always pointed us to. That is, the primary question is the vocal setting. The four voices, you know, Michel used it, tenor, basso, soprano, alto. These four voices are the core group of any classical music. The sung poetry is the core of classical music. And then surrounded by a more and more flourishing counterpointal development. Now, to give only, you know, because of we make it very brief with one sense, just to introduce you the theme from the opening of the Requiem, the text. As Mozart had to write, this is more than 100 verses which Mozart is composing in this whole piece. He starts off by, in Latin, Requiem aeternam dona eis domine. Et lux perpetua luceat eis, meaning eternal rest grant them, O Lord, and may perpetual light shine upon them. And then the soloist sings, a hymn, O God, becometh thee in Zion, and vow shall be paid to thee in Jerusalem. And the chorus sings again, hear my prayer, to thee all flesh shall come. And it gets repeated, Requiem aeternam dona eis domine. And then sings a very intricate fugue, Kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy. And then starts the second part. Now, just that you have an idea how Mozart is organizing this great work, I sketch you the work, briefly the first picture. So, as you can see, is the first two, Requiem aeterna dona eis, a fugal opening, and followed by the Kyrie eleison, Christe eleison, in a double fugal form. And then comes a very large second part, the sequence, it's called, which are 19, or if you include Amen as a separate stanza, 20 stanzas, which Mozart groups around these six pieces of music, and he groups especially the solo voices Tuba Mirum and the Recordare, And if you look underneath, I just indicated the method. You know, incredible condensed Bachian counterpoint, and concluding the second part, Lacrimosa, with an intended double fugue, which he never wrote and finished, but he left sketches. And up until today, people trying to complete a double fugue. Shortly, the next picture. And then Mozart, organizes the other part of the work in further three parts, the so-called offertorium, and there it breaks off his own writing. At the end of the offertorium, and his pupil Süssmayr and others work out the intended fourth part and the fifth part. And Süssmayr, because of his discussion with Mozart, tried to be as close to Mozart's intention. Therefore, he used Mozart's opening Kyrie double fugue as a concluding double fugue, cum sanctis. So this is that you have an idea of this, you know, hour-long work. We focus now, coming back to the first picture, we focus on the beginning of the Dies Irae, the beginning of the second part, which is a tremendous contrast to the very calm Requiem Aeternam into the upsetness of the Dies Irae. Now, to get this a little clearer, I read to you the text. Third picture. Now, Dies Irae, Dies Illa, solvet saeclum in favilla, teste David cum Sibilla. Quantus tremor est futurus, quando judex est venturus, cuncta stricte discussurus. In Latin, the day of wrath, that day will dissolve the world in ashes, as David prophesied with the Sibyl. How great a terror there will be when the judge shall come, who will thresh out everything thoroughly. And some person tried, this is a poem from the 13th century, he tried to adapt it in German. Tag der Rache, Tag der Sünden, wird das Weltall sich entzünden, wie Sibyl und David künden? Welch ein Graus wird sein und sagen, wenn der Richter kommt, mit Fragen streng zu prüfen, alle Klagen. Next picture. Now, Mozart, even this very small, relatively small piece, if you consider the whole thing, mirrors the development of counterpointal and dialoguing form in dealing with this text. And so he organizes first the presentation of the first stanza, Dies Irae, as it is reported, you know, by David cum Sibylla. Then the second stanza, Quantus Tremor. And then he makes the first variation and evolution. And something will become clear to you, that what seems to be first is, you know, enormous day, Tag des Zorns, Dies Irae, now Mozart listens into it to a shifting conception of justice. So suddenly, from the judgment, it comes to the question of justice. Next picture. Which is the form he does the last and final part in this counter voices, taking the first voice of the first line of the second stanza, Tremor, also Quantus Tremor est futurus, in dialogue with the first verse of the first stanza, Dies Irae, Dies Illa. And is developing it to the high point where then he comes in with the second stanza, Quantus Tremor est futurus, quando judex est venturus, and then leading it to the absolutely high point that at this point, puncta strictus, that at this moment everything will be judged. And that is the way how Mozart changes the concept from day of judgment into the question of justice. Now, give you an idea of how Mozart conceptualized. Next picture. Okay, here the classical, what Lin always refers to as the beginning of everything. The differentia specifica of the human voice. I have painted it just as we do it in the book, the lowest register in, let's say, red, the middle register in yellow, the high register, the third register in blue, according, we can say, to the frequencies. And you can see how, and I picked out only the, for now, for this part of music, sopran, mezzo-sopran, tenor, and the bass voice. So when you can see how Mozart uses this register differentiation to develop a complex idea as one idea which is going through the whole piece. Okay, next. Now, we will sing now with the chorus first. This is what is left from Mozart's hand, transcribed in readable form. That is, the four voices, the singing voices, then the first four measures with the string instruments, you see, violino 1, violino 2, viola, and the so-called basso, the general bass, and then only the motivo. Next picture, look up the first violin. Only the motivo. That is what Mozart sketched out. So you get the idea. Four human voices, the motivum, this violin counterpoint, and the bass voice, as Johannes Brahms always says, if this is not moving, you have lost something. Now, let's start with the first example. The chorus sings alone. The chorus sings alone. If you can move a little bit. But we show some pictures here. First picture, the picture before again, and then follow the text now. Yeah? So people can follow the way the stanza works. Now, here alone, the bass voice. You see, if you look at the register, it is a high register, the third register. Now, where does it come from, this theme? It comes from the opening. It is a little hidden, but that is from the opening of the Requiem, and we now sing it. Show the next picture. Next picture. By the way, this is just that you see the full orchestral partitura in the way how Süssmayr and others completed it, including, you will see it here, the clarinet, the corni di bassetto, fagotti, trombe, timpani. This is then later written into it by the pupil. Next. Okay, here you see the four voices, how it opens. But you just, if you even cannot read notes, look how Mozart starts in the low register. Compare it again to the earlier picture. To this, you see, the bass voice now, because this dies irae, the most exciting thing, he puts it in the third register. Come back to the... Okay, now we sing just this part with the bass voice. See? Okay, so have this in ear when we now come back to the dies irae. Before I sing it now with the counterpoint, let's hear just the counterpoint. you can put the picture there. Okay. Nee, davor. Davor, das Bild, nochmal da. Noch davor, ja. Okay. There you, we play now the counterpoint, viola in 1 and the bass voice. Thank you. Now together with the chorus. Now we come Now we come to the second stanza, where you will hear now with the four string instruments introducing the bridging, as Mozart intends to give the variations a shift to the idea of justice. Mozart develops a fugal canonical structure between the soprano voice this quantus and the tenor voice quantus, a little canonical structure, so to open up that what he had thought about before. Thank you. Now, the last part is I only show the now expressive invocation between the bass voice and the other three voices. When the bass voice sings Quantus tremor est futurus, and that 13. Okay. This is the part, the Quantus is on the other side, but just where you see the bass voice and the other voices coming in. The string quartet plays it. We start at 48.3. So I think you can imagine if it now, in this dialogue, this cuncta stricta, that Mozart was thinking, okay, all has to be judged, but I want to put it in the voice, bass voice invocation, and then all the others. And one just compositional moment, this which I have signed there, around the tremor in the soprano voice, and the bass voice, and then in the second violin, and the viola, these are what we call generically Lydian intervals, a clash. And you find in Mozart's work, all when there is intensification of musical solutions, preparing, he does it by intensification with these so-called Lydian intervals. And in the Ave Verum, Mindy had shown it very, very well at the time. So we show it just in a slow motion what type of clash occurs. Just first the middle voices. Now, okay, the same cello and the
First violin
is basically similar to this. Okay, thank you. Now, I asked the chorus to come forward, the rest. We can close the light, put on the light. Now we will perform for you this Dies Irae, as much as we have studied it, and with the last part, the Lacrimosa, as Mozart had left it, after the eighth measures. Licht, können wir mal Licht anmachen? Lothar? Oder kann da jemand mal Licht machen da vorne? Wo ist denn der Dieters? So, kannst du mal was machen. Rechts sind die ganzen Dinger. Einfach da draufdrücken. Ist kaputt?
Nein.
Rechts diese Punkte einfach draufdrücken. Ja, draufdrücken. Alle draufdrücken. Ja, okay. Sehr klar. So. So as I said, first Dies Irae, second the end of the second part, Lacrimosa, only until Mozart's handwriting ended, at measure 8.